Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the studio gym where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's Monday, and we're getting off to a great start. We're going to be talking today about air pollution, something that we talked a lot about when I was a young man, but it seems to have faded into the background with the myriad of other problems that we face in this country. During the first segment, we'll be talking with Dr. Gregory Wilenius, and we're going to talk about how air pollution affects the cardiovascular system and some other systems as well. When I look at his research, I see that he's delved into this quite deeply. Then we're going to be changing up. We're going to have Dr. Mark Weisskopf on, and we're going to talk about how air pollution affects the nervous system. And also, is there a possible linkage to air pollution and autism? We'll get into that a little bit later in the show. Dr. Gregory Wilenius, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
Okay, so I don't know how old you are, but I'm 55 years old, and when I was in grammar school, the discussion about air pollution began in the late 60s, how bad it was, and we had to do something about it. Have we done anything? Before we get into your research, was it worse back then than it is today? Is it just as bad, but we're just not talking about it because there's bigger problems?
No, you're absolutely right that air pollution levels in the United States have improved dramatically in the last 30, 40 years. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency of the U.S., has been active in regulating important contributors to air pollution, and we've made great progress. Air pollution in every part of the country has decreased over the last several decades.
But at the same time, while it has decreased, I guess it's become more evident to the scientific community about what its potential damaging effects are. I was looking back in a blog post that I posted April of 2010 that I titled, Where You Perform Your Aerobic Exercise May Increase Your Risk of Heart Attack. At that time, there was a study presentation that was done on long-term exposure to traffic particles is associated with increased blood pressure. So talking about the effects of air pollution is where we've shifted our focus to, as opposed to just air pollution as a whole.
Yeah, there's a lot more that we know now about what the health effects of air pollution are than we used to. And so if you think about the initial body of research, people initially thought that, gosh, you're breathing this stuff in, it must primarily affect your lungs and
right.
your ability to breathe. And that was true, and that was where much of the research was until about 1999 or 2000, when people started realizing that, gosh, you know, although we're breathing this stuff in and it's affecting our lungs, it's having these other effects outside of our lungs, and we realized that really the maybe perhaps the single largest impact was on the cardiovascular system. And so your heart, your blood pressures and blood pressure and your ability particularly in elderly people, the ability to remain heart healthy seemed to be impacted. And so the research really in the last 10 to 12 years has been largely centered on the cardiovascular effects of air pollution.
Are the results that it plays on the heart and even some other organ systems a direct result of this particulate matter being in our bodies and our body just doesn't know what to do with it? Or is it a result of the type of particulate matter that we're coming in contact with, like maybe heavy metals and stuff like that, and their direct effect on the biology of the human body?
I think that's a great question, and it's both as far as we can tell. It's, you know, the particles come into, these are fine particles, these are smaller than a human hair, and they're coming in, and, these are largely from burning fuel, so either from power plants or from, cars and trucks on the roadways, other manufacturing processes. And these particles, you breathe them in, and they settle into the lower parts of the lungs, and then they cause reactions of the body. The body, you know, defends itself against these, and so you have some very short, very immediate reactions of the autonomic nervous system. I think you had somebody on your show a couple weeks ago talking about heart rate variability.
Yes.
Sort of how your heart rate changes from beat to beat. The heart rate changes instantly. And so a lot of the early studies showed, you know, really big changes in heart rate variability from when you go from a day of low pollution to a day of much higher pollution. And so we think that there's these very quick effects, but then there's also slightly longer term effects, say in the matter instead of minutes to hours to days on heart rate variability, you might have changes in inflammation, which we know now is very important to cardiovascular disease. And you might have this over the course of days to weeks. You might see increases in inflammation.
Well,
and all these things end up affecting, you know, your whole
cardiovascular
system.
The long term, right. And so let's talk about some of your research in the cardiovascular system. Did your group not learn that individuals who live closer to main thoroughfares have a higher incidence of certain types of heart problems?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of research, not just our own, has shown that pollution from traffic seems to be particularly important in causing some of these effects. And so long term, right, people within the same city that live closer to a major roadway, we're talking highways or very busy other major roadways, are experiencing higher rates of heart attacks, and that they live less long after a heart attack or less long after a stroke.
Now, and that was the other thing I was going to say, the stroke. So does the accumulation of these pollutants increase the thrombotic effect on blood, or how does it affect a stroke?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So the, you know, you have, once you sort of think of pollution having effects on the vascular system, you know, remember that you have blood vessels to every organ in the body, right? So if we can imagine air pollution causing heart attacks, then it's, the next step is to think, well, what other blood, you know, if this is mediated
vascular,
through the blood
right,
vessels,
right.
What other vascular effects are you going to have? And so we started looking at effects on the brain vasculature, the cerebral vasculature, and we saw this increased risk in stroke. And, you know, that effect is in a Boston area study we did recently was quite large. I mean, so the EPA has a daily air quality index that you can go to the government website, airnow.gov, and check for your particular city what the predicted air quality index is going to be for today and for tomorrow. And we compared, you know, so Boston's a very, is always been in compliance with the current EPA regulations. And so even at these levels that are considered safe by the U.S. government, we saw that on the days that the EPA considers of moderate air quality instead of good, there was about a 30% increased risk of stroke on those days.
Wow.
So, you know, if you extrapolate that to all of the Northeast states, and, you know, that's a substantial number of strokes that we think could have been prevented had air pollution levels always been in the good levels rather than moderate.
What role does foliage play? When I was leaving my subdivision this morning in preparation for this discussion, I live off of a main, two-lane roadway, if you will, that connects two areas of the city called U.S. Highway 42. And it's not really a highway. Again, it's a two-lane, four-lane, two going in each direction, east and west. And during rush hour in the evening and in the morning, there is a lot of traffic there. But it's this whole roadway is engulfed by trees, just mature big trees and foliage that not only blocks the sound of this roadway, but does that have an effect on the amount of particulate matter that is then spewed into the air?
You know, that's a great question. It's something people are looking into very actively in research now. And the answer seems to be that, yes, it does have an effect, but exactly how that effect is, like what kind of greenery is most effective in blocking both sound and potential air pollution is something that's still being investigated. And for instance, there's lots of stuff that comes out of a tailpipe of a car or a truck, right? So there's particles and there's gases, and it's possible, and there's noise, and it's possible that different, you know, whether you have trees or dense shrubbery, that these might differentially control some pollutants better than others. And so that's something people are actively looking into, is how can we try to limit the exposure from the area highways and busy roadways into the houses of the people that live right next to them.
And I want to cover that a little bit deeper when we come back. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to pick up this discussion on how air pollution is affecting your cardiovascular system and maybe even some other organ systems. We're talking with Dr. Gregory Wilenius. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
Could Altrient supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrient C and Altrient ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrient C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrient ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrient cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
New from Rob Riggish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes the Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplement, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold processed through the patented chill right process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Gregory Wilenius right now. We're talking about how air pollution affects the cardiovascular system. Okay, so, Dr. Wilenius, I understand it's not practical for people to enclose all roadways in foliage. So is there anything someone can do if they are living close to a roadway to help mitigate some of the potential negative effects?
Well, one of the few interventions that I think has been shown to hold promise in that area is air conditioning. So we know that pollution levels inside houses that have air conditioning, particularly central air conditioning, are lower than in houses that, you know, always have their windows open. So depending on where you live and the weather that you have in that area, we know that you know, air conditioning use is more common or less common. And so in those houses where you have air conditioning during the summer, we know that, that those pollution levels tend to be lower.
Now,
aside from that, you know, what people can really do is just be as healthy as possible. So if you think of these risks on the individual level, you know, we're talking of, you know, an increase in you know, a moderate increase in risk. And if you're going to, you know, multiply your risk by 10%, if you're starting off with a much lower baseline risk because you don't have high blood pressure, you don't have diabetes, you don't smoke, you eat right, you exercise, then all these things will lower your starting risk, your baseline risk. And so, therefore, any of these hazards, like air pollution, will have less of an effect on you. So really the best way for people to protect themselves is to, you know, stay as healthy as possible.
What would you say about people who jog on major roadways where there's a lot of traffic? Wouldn't you say this is counterproductive? I mean, personally, I think it is. When I see someone jogging on a major roadway where there is a lot of vehicles, a lot of air pollution, you know, going on, and it's at ground level, you know, hasn't even had a chance to dissipate and kind of thin out, and you're just breathing this in at a time where the phenomenon of vascular density occurs. So you're carrying this air pollution to the farthest reaches of your vascular system. Isn't this just a bad idea?
Yeah, you know, a lot of people have suggested that in the research world that, gosh, you know, we should be recommending that people don't exercise right next to a busy roadway. And if you look at, you know, depending on where you live, you know, some of the bike paths and exercise paths are like right next to, you know, major roadways. And while we enjoy using them, that maybe, you know, jogging through the park or on those really bad days, maybe jogging, you know, on your treadmill instead would be better for you. And, you know, it makes sense. It intuitively makes a lot of sense from the health effects that we're seeing. But the problem with recommending that is that there hasn't really been a clinical trial or, you know, a randomized study looking at that intervention to see if we could really, you know, detect health.
Recommend
so there's
it.
Been a couple studies that have looked at whether, you know, people either biking, you know, through traffic or biking on bike paths away from traffic, and they do see some physiologic differences, some differences in your heart rate and your blood pressure and your heart rate variability, some markers of coagulation or inflammation. So there's some evidence for it, but as sort of a widespread recommendation, I think it's still untested.
What percentage of air pollution is really burdened as a result of the mass number of automobiles that we have here in the United States, and what percentage of it is industrial? I was told once that if you cleaned up all the cars in the United States and they produce virtually no bad emissions, it would not make the air pollution problem go away because the majority of air pollution is caused by industry. Is that true?
It totally depends on where in the country you're talking about and in other countries. So there's some cities that, you know, you can think of cities that have major gridlock, very heavy traffic. Those cities have a very large contribution of air pollution from emissions from car and truck traffic. On the other hand, in some areas of the country, more dense in manufacturing, more dense in power plants, a lot of times those industries are placed away from cities.
Mm-hmm.
You might get in those areas, you might get that the predominant source of pollution is, in fact, those industries and power generation. So it really depends where you live, and it's not exactly where you live because remember that this stuff is carried downwind.
Right.
And in fact, you know, you can see, you know, if you look at sort of the Google Earth picture sometimes when there's been wildfires in California, you see that those plumes of smoke can, you know, go several states away that might be influencing people. And same thing, our air pollution, you know, from the East Coast gets exported, you know, goes up the coast towards Canada and beyond. And even, you know, some of the pollution from China can make it over to the California coast. So it's really not a national problem. It's really, you know, a global
problem
in terms of the distribution of air pollution.
Yeah, and that's what makes it kind of even scarier, because even because what we do here has some effect, but it may not have all the effect we want because we're inheriting some of other people's practices as well. What about ozone? Do you study that as well when you look at these, or you just look at the particulate matter that is spewed from burning fossil fuels and the like?
We look at both. I mean, you know, there's a number of gaseous pollutants, including ozone and carbon monoxide, that the EPA regulates, and we do look at in our studies. The most intense attention has been paid to particulate matter. Ozone early on was thought to have lots of respiratory effects, and now we're starting to see sort of a resurgence of research into whether ozone could have cardiovascular effects. And there was a very interesting study from the University of Southern California recently showing that kids that grew up in an area with higher ozone levels tended to have more atherosclerosis in adolescent and later life. And so, you know, very interesting that ozone, even controlling for some of the other pollutants, could have these cardiovascular effects. It's kind of a new area that people are turning to.
You indicated the increased possibility of stroke given the poor air quality days. Is there any evidence that heart attacks, ischemic events also occur at a greater degree during high pollution days?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, our research on stroke was really modeled after some of the work done by researchers at Harvard University on heart attacks in the first place. And they showed similarly that when, you know, you look at when people had their heart attacks and whether the air pollution was high on that day or low on that day, that the risk of heart attack was considerably greater on high air pollution days. So maybe, you know, 10 to 15% higher on high air pollution days than on low air pollution days.
Yeah, that's still pretty considerable, isn't it? I mean, what about our European counterparts?
Well, so it's considerable depending on where you are. So if you're, you know, 80 years old and, you know, smoke and high blood pressure and your risk of a heart attack is pretty high to begin with, then that's a pretty sizable increase. If you're in your 30s and a very, you know, relatively healthy and a very low risk of a heart attack, you know, you got to wonder, you know, how important is that versus maybe giving up smoking?
What about our European counterparts? We know that in many places in Europe, we have good friends who contribute to the show that are in Germany. We know that there's a lot of walking and biking that goes on there because petrol is so expensive. Most people, either even if they own cars, they don't use them with any frequency. Do we see any differences as a result of the European way of life as it relates to this phenomenon of air pollution?
Yeah, I think that a lot of the research has come out of Western Europe where we see similar health effects. Now, when we think about traffic in Europe, it's actually quite different than traffic in the U.S. because Europeans have a lot more diesel cars than Americans do. And we think that there's differences in certainly in the pollution and maybe in the health effects of the pollution between gasoline engines and diesel engines. So there are, I think, important differences between Europe and the U.S. in some of those health effects. But broadly, the research has been consistent in the same effects that we find in the U.S., they find in Europe and vice versa.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about that. But diesel fuel is basically unburned to a great degree. So it's actually like raw petrol being put into the air or oil being put into the air. So that's really interesting. What about, I think one of your research papers that you were also an author of indicated some changes on renal distress and air pollution. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And, you know, the point is, it's just like we said, gosh, you know, if we're affecting the vascular, you know, the blood supply to the heart, and then we looked at the brain and said, gosh, we're also seeing strokes that's affecting the vascular supply to the brain. You know, what other highly vascular organs are there where we might be seeing effects? And so we thought to look at the kidneys. And indeed, in this one study, and it's the first study of its kind, so, you know, it has to be taken with a grain of salt that it needs to be replicated. But in that study, we saw that people that live closer to major roadways were at higher risk of having lower kidney function, and which so that's an adverse effect.
It makes perfect sense. How about the liver? Since the liver bears a great deal of the burden of trying to flush the blood of these types of impurities, do we see changes in hepatic landscape in individuals who live closer to major roadways?
I think that's a great question and a great idea. I haven't seen that any evidence of that. I haven't seen anybody look at that question, but I think it's a great one to look at.
Because obviously the liver is just a big old sponge of blood. You know what I mean? When we talk about vasculature and microvasculature, I think of the liver right away.
So that's right, and it's so important for detoxifying anything that we, you know, it's many of the pollutants that might be actually getting into the bloodstream. You know, you mentioned earlier the heavy metals and you know, other organic fractions that might be particularly getting into the blood supply, and so being able to detoxify those is important. And I haven't seen direct studies of looking at that question. I think it's a great idea.
Are there any really bad offenders here? I mean, are there any byproducts of industry or even of gasoline powered cars and vehicles that seems to be, wow, this one is particularly nasty? Like maybe some sort of particulate cadmium, or is there something that we look at and we go, wow, you know, air pollution is bad, but see this one here, this is really particularly worrisome?
Yeah, I think over time there have been certainly concerns. I mean, lead is a typical example where there were, you know, these very strong, really undeniable effects of lead in air, you know, lead in particularly in children and affecting their cognitive development, and that much of their exposure to that was coming from lead in gasoline before it was banned in the late 70s. In the U.S., although in many countries in the world, it's still not banned, so that's still a problem. You know, beyond that, there have been a number of gas additives that are implicated in specific health effects, but it's hard because the additives change over time, and even by country, like in Canada, they have some different additives than we do in the U.S. And so I think it's been tough to sort of have another you know, key source, key identifiable toxicant like lead was so dramatically discovered to have these health effects.
I live in Kentucky where coal is king. Does a coal-fired emissions produce a special concern when it comes to the types of air pollution that we develop in this country?
And, you know, it's controversial, but, you know, I think largely the coal emissions are thought to be quite toxic. And the problem is again, this long-range transport. So, you know, in the Northeast, we get a lot of the derivative pollution that comes from the emissions from those power plants. And, you know, particularly the ones that have been grandfathered under, you know, that don't have to live up to the current regulatory standards for emission standards. There's
why are they grandfathered? I'm just curious. Are they just such old plants it's not practical to up-rev them or something?
That's exactly the argument that's made, is that it would be too expensive to retrofit those and to the current technologies, current emission control technologies. And if those weren't grandfathered in, then, you know, and made to rise to the current standards, you know, probably many of those would actually be converted to natural gas plants because that would be cheaper than retrofitting them to the current coal emission standard.
I hate when acceptable levels of something are altered to make room for industry to continue to operate the way they operate versus to protect people. And we see this all the time in areas of foods and pollution, you know. It's not practical to lower these levels without disrupting industry, so people will just have to get used to being in contact with them. We're just going to raise the acceptable levels. I think that this is one of the most asinine approaches that government applies, and it really is derelict of the duties of protecting the citizens of this country.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that would agree with that. The flip side, just to play the devil's advocate for a second, is that if you retrofit all those plants, you will pay more for your electricity. And I don't know how much more, but, you know, industry would argue you're going to pay substantially more. And the question is are you then willing to say, okay, you know, not you personally, but are people willing to say, I will pay a little bit more for my electricity so that I can breathe some better air?
You know why I don't buy that argument? Because power keeps going up in price anyway. We constantly get raises in our price of electricity. And it happens, you know, organically. Just recently here in Louisville, Louisville Gas and Electric, which is owned by some big conglomerate now, you know, just slipped a big one to us. Oh, by the way, we just raised everything right at the time where everybody's going to be using their power more, consuming more in the summer months. You know, they raised it like 8-9%, which sounds innocuous, but when you look at it across the bill and across the years, it's ridiculous. So, you know, they always say, well, you're going to have to pay more. Well, guess what? We're paying more now anyway, and we're going to pay more a year from now, and we're going to have this burden of pollution on top of it. So,
yeah,
I
agree. Right. I mean, certainly the price fluctuates a lot. And, you know, with the introduction of natural gas, and right now natural gas is cheaper than it has been in the past. And so, you know, there's room for changes in the pricing structure. But, you know, if you look at the cost of regulations, so the Office of Management and Budget has looked at the cost of regulations and the benefits from those regulations, and the Clean Air Act, under which air pollution is regulated by the EPA, has a return ratio of more than tenfold. So for every dollar you spend regulating this stuff, and the compliance, the cost of compliance, more than 10 times of that is returned in health benefits to people.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, listen, I want to thank you so much, Dr. Wilenius, for coming on and talking about this important topic. And hopefully, the greater the awareness, the more people will talk about it, and the more they'll demand that the things that are causing pollution today are continue to be reduced as they were back in the 60s when we first started having this discussion.
Yeah, terrific. Thanks for your time, and I appreciate the invitation to be on.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to change it up a little bit. We're going to have Dr. Mark Weisskopf on, and we're going to talk about the effects of pollution on the nervous system, but more importantly, some recent research that may link these types of pollutants to the development of autism spectrum disorder. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a 1-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. WiseChoiceMedicine.net. CanSee Eye Drops. The name says it all.
Could Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Remember, you can try any of the Age Force transdermal patches for 1 month for free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today to learn more about the details. Okay, we're staying with the topic of air pollution, but we're changing it slightly as we welcome Dr. Mark Weisskopf to the show. How are you doing, Dr. Weisskopf?
Very good. Thank you.
And we're going to talk a little bit about how air pollution may affect the nervous system. And when we talk about the nervous system, we're talking, are we talking about peripheral or central? We're talking about the brain or the nervous system in general?
Well, largely our work is focusing on the brain, the central nervous system, more so than the peripheral.
Okay. So the really interesting research piece that I was forwarded was one that may show that prenatal exposure, obviously in the womb, to air pollute the actives or the ingredient the things in air pollution may precipitate autism. Can you talk about that study a little bit?
Sure. Yeah, that's right. So we basically looked at mothers in a large cohort we have at Harvard called the Nurses' Health Study 2, which is a cohort of over 100,000 medically trained women, so they're all nurses. And we essentially found out which among them had children with autism, and we used Environmental Protection Agency models of air pollutants throughout the U.S. to basically link what the level of a particular pollutant was where any given mother was during pregnancy or around the time of pregnancy, and then how likely it was that she have a kid that later goes on to develop autism.
Now, just out of curiosity, did nurses that were in this study, did they present a higher number of autistic births than the general population, or is it pretty much the same when you look at it compared to the general population?
Right, so that's a very good question. It's actually not exactly as simple as it might think to answer that. We are actually looking into that. We have to figure out sort of who the population is in terms of the total number of kids and all that sort of thing. And given that this cohort was actually originally instituted to look at the nurses themselves rather than their children,
right,
that creates a few problems for us. But we're doing that now, and it actually looks like the numbers match up very closely with what has generally been reported across the country.
Excellent. So what did you find out as far as the relationship between air pollution and autism?
So I should say that we were sort of following up on a couple of other reports that had come out using a sort of similar approach and the similar models, one out of the Bay Area in California and another in North Carolina and West Virginia. And what we basically decided to do was there are lots of pollutants that are in the air and that are modeled by the EPA, and that poses problems, since if you look at thousands of things, some things are going to look like they may have a signal. So we decided just to focus in particular on a set of 14 that those two prior studies had suggested there might be some association with autism. And really, cutting to the chase, what we found were results that were startlingly close to, in particular, the Bay Area study in California. So we found several metals that showed that the mothers who were in areas that had higher levels of these metals in the air were at higher risk of having a kid who would go on to develop autism. Diesel particulate matter and another compound called methylene chloride. But in general, the one of the most remarkable things was how consistent our results were, in particular with that earlier Bay Area study.
You know, there was a study we talked about a week or so ago that showed the 190-plus different toxic chemicals found in umbilical cord blood of moms who delivered babies over the past, I think it was year and a half. This study looked at a total cohort of about 9,000 mothers, I believe. And it's shocking, you know, and my audience is probably going to yawn now because I've said this so many times, but, you know, we're looking for the silver bullet in autism, but there is no silver bullet. There, I think that some children have an innately strong immune system and some don't. And it's the cumulative effect of all of these things, what they're exposed to in the womb, and then perhaps some things that they're exposed to once they're born. Lots of debate about this and that. But the bottom line is that there's some children that just can't stand up to the load and some children who can. And I think that's why it's so hard to put our finger on, well, this is what's causing autism, because it's not one thing. It's an accumulation of a lot of things. What would you say to a statement like that?
Well, I think in general you're absolutely right about that, and there are two main issues. Which one is that many different things might lead to what we call autism, and the second thing is that what we call autism may actually be many different types of things. It's
right.
Clearly aberrant development of the nervous system, but those can have slightly different pictures. And in fact, autism itself is really largely a behavioral
right.
diagnosis, so
right.
it can really sort of mean different things, and you may get there by many different ways. I will say that there's no question there's a strong genetic component to autism. We haven't identified the autism gene, and it's, if anything, probably many genes, but it's also probably some interaction between genes and these different types of environmental exposures that come on top of it.
Well, interestingly enough, we did a show a week or so ago, and we talked about there is some testing being done now in moms who are getting ready to have babies that may indicate a greater risk of developing autism. And I feel like it had something to do with the IgG immune system, but also testosterone levels in women. It has been implicated in putting a mother at greater risk of having a child on the spectrum, higher testosterone levels in women, because testosterone seems to be linked to some inability to clear toxins from the system. And so those two things just came out recently. One of my guests is speaking in Paris, France, I think this week, about autoimmune-like effects of some autism spectrum disorders.
Right, right. Yeah, no, that's certainly true. And immune system effects in the mother, testosterone levels in the mother during pregnancy are all things that have been sort of suggested to contribute to autism. Part of the question here is going to be, one, sort of identifying how much of an effect any of these have. And then also, of course, whether you can really be diagnostic early. You might be able to say you're kind of at higher risk,
right.
or there are some issues, but then the question is how much higher risk and how a mother is going to take that information at this stage in terms of what we know.
So let's talk about air pollution now just for a second and stay within the realm of this. Obviously, there is a linkage between a higher load of air pollution and the possibility of developing autism in children. What about other neurological disorders, Parkinson's disease, Alzheimer's disease? Is there any evidence that air pollution may not necessarily cause them, but increase the aggressiveness of these diseases?
So the distinction between those two we really haven't worked out yet. There's certainly growing interest in this area in general. I should point out that it's very different if we're talking about Alzheimer's or Parkinson's or a neurodegenerative disorder like that versus something we think may be going on in utero, partly because of how the sort of biology is being affected. So a mother who's pregnant and exposed to air pollution, that's going to get into the mother's system, and then it's got to go through that to affect the fetus. If we're talking something like Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or any, you know, cognitive function type thing in an adult, there's also the possibility not only that it gets in and gets into their circulatory system and has effects, but one thing that's creating a lot of interest now is this, what seems to be a strong possibility that some aspects of pollution can actually just go essentially right through the nasal olfactory bulb, that is through the nose and directly into the brain,
wow.
bypassing circulation altogether. And there are certainly components of air pollution that seem like they can do that, and there's some evidence suggesting that we do see sort of inflammation within the brain among people who are exposed to high levels of air pollution. So that in sort of adults and adult disorders is another way that the air pollution could have effects on the brain.
And that makes perfect sense, because right now intranasally delivered insulin is being experimented with on Alzheimer's patients because of an impaired. We know that insulin is produced in the brain on demand as needed. So that's one of the things that's really exciting right now that they're working on. But we also know that intranasally delivered hormones such as oxytocin act on the brain as opposed to ingested, sublingual, or even injected forms which don't get past the blood-brain barrier. So it sounds to me like the Trojan horse into the brain is through the nose.
It's certainly quite possible, and as I say, it's a growing area of interest right now. And you know, there's part of the issue is that some of the things that are in air pollution are what we call ultrafine particles, or these very, very small ones, less than on the nanometer scale. And these things sort of have very different properties, and they can kind of go right through barriers that otherwise you wouldn't get through.
If you can smell something, that means that there is some amount of particle in the air that is making contact with the portion of the nose and the olfactory sensory system. Isn't that a true statement? If you can smell it, then that means we think that this smell or odor is this innocuous metaphysical effect. There's actually particles of that in the air. That's why you smell it, right?
Well, that's right, but usually the way that works is that we have receptors essentially that are outside of our nervous system that detect those things in the air, and they sort of engage other signals that then go through the brain and don't necessarily involve that particle that you're smelling going into the brain. But what we're seeing now, that some things, not everything you can smell, but some things don't just act on these receptors that stick outside the brain. They can actually either go right through them into the brain or go through other channels right into the brain.
Okay. All right, let's do this. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Dr. Mark Weisskopf. We're going to be talking about the effects of air pollution on the nervous system. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
You basically live life thanks to vitamin D. It affects every type of cell and tissue in your body. This is the reason optimizing your vitamin D blood level is essential for healthy living. The most efficient way to optimize your blood level is to take the perfect dose. And the most cost-effective way to determine the perfect dose is through vitamin D blood testing. The vitamin D test for Superhuman Radio is only $30, $17 cheaper than the lowest member price. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to order.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Mark Weisskopf. We're talking about air pollution's effect on the nervous system. Dr. Weisskopf, one of the things that I spoke about in the earlier segment with Dr. Gregory Willenis was, you know, do we see these effects in Europe versus the United States comparatively? We know that they drive fewer cars. And he raised the issue that, yes, while they drive fewer cars, they drive diesel cars. And in fact, your research implicates diesel fuels as being perhaps the worst offenders. Is that true?
That certainly was one of the pollutants that came up as sort of a top hit in what we were finding, yes. And I would say that there's some other, couple of other studies out of California that have also tried to, or sort of linked towards some traffic-related pollutant as well.
So does diesel fuel contain different things, or is it because it's predominantly unburned the way petrol, gasoline is pretty much burned, and we're getting, you know, this, all of these burnt up particulate coming out of the tailpipe, where with diesel fuel you've got this almost greasy, oily mist that comes out.
So I should say first that it's a sort of diesel particulate matter, any kind of particulate matter, is a lot of stuff in it. So we don't actually know, even if we have a good signal with something like that, it's often hard to pinpoint what specific aspect of it, since it's a bit of a mixture, is most relevant. I should also say, though, that especially in Europe, with they're moving a lot more to diesel fuel, they tend to have much, they've more advanced engines that burn better and have cleaner diesel that are coming out there than we have here. But again, as I say, I don't, at this stage, we're certainly not at the point to be able to say what particular aspect it is. And in fact, I would say that even with the diesel particulate matter, you know, we had several signals that looked promising in terms of having a possible relation with autism in our work. And I think there's more work to be done to really even isolate whether it's the diesel particulate matter versus one of the other aspects we were looking at.
Say other aspects, are we talking about also fossil fuels being burned by cars, or are we talking about industrial pollutants?
Both, really. So, you know, we're talking about metals like, you know, lead and manganese and things like that, and we're talking about solvents like methylene chloride. So the problem a little bit in what we've done is that there's almost too much there to tease out any specific one or set of ones that may be driving what we're seeing most. So we have other ways to try and get at that, and I think one of the sort of exciting things for this research right now is that I think it's actually advancing much more than it, you know, rapidly than it has in the past. So I think there's several studies coming along that will provide much more solid data on trying to get at what particular aspects in the air or wherever a mother might be getting exposed to them from would be potentially responsible for this.
So do you think that it would be a responsible thing for an expecting mom to wear one of those surgical masks to kind of try to filter some of the particulate matter out of what she's breathing, or is that useless? Those things are these particles are so small they just get sucked right through that thing.
Well, I'm not totally up on it, the performance of those things. My general understanding is that the sort of simple ones you buy in a store, you know, it's not just going through it; it's kind of going through the sides of it. I would say, as far as autism goes, you know, we're still sort of early days. I mean, you know, we are clearly seeing something here, and there are several studies that are coalescing around something about air pollution. I think we have more work in front of us to really nail it down, but as Dr. Willenis probably spoke about, you know, there are certainly plenty of other health effects of air pollution that we would want to sort of avoid. I don't know that wearing one of those masks is going to help tremendously unless you're in a really, really dirty zone, but certainly trying to limit to the best one can't hurt.
Yeah, because I have this suspicion that one of your colleagues is going to publish a study in the next year or two saying that the inflammation caused by air pollution also contributes to insulin resistance. It just makes perfect sense to me that, you know, when we look at this perfect storm that we're living in, you know, we've pooped in the water, we've pooped in the air, our food is poop. It's like everything that we've done so far has led us to this point in time where we are just really being assaulted on all levels. And the rate of insulin resistance out there today, there's even some evidence that exposure to 1.5 gigahertz and above RF, which comes from everybody's iPhone and so on, can cause spontaneous insulin resistance on a cellular level. We live in not just an obesogenic world today. We live in an insulin resistance-ogenic world as well. And I'm waiting for somebody to say, well, guess what? Another thing is those metals get into your cells and they cause the cells to become deranged and they don't respond to insulin the way they're supposed to.
Right, right. Well, it's certainly not, I guess, out of the question, and we're learning new things all the time about what this stuff can do and new ways that it can get into the body and into the brain, so we definitely need to be exploring all possibilities of this, yeah.
Since you do this kind of research, does it concern you and about you and your family and where you live, and have you, you know, do you take any type of precautions personally?
I mean, I wouldn't say overt cautions, but do I want to sort of avoid my kids playing, you know, in traffic polluted areas? Absolutely. Get them out in green space and you know, breathing clean air. I think, that's definitely true. We live in a practical world too, and obviously we have to do what we have to do, but I think it's certainly worth thinking about and thinking about, you know, working in the most healthy environment and playing in the most healthy environment. And part of that is pollution. There's no question. And, you know, doing also on a sort of local community level, what one can do to reduce these things is very worthwhile.
You know, I asked Dr. Wallenius this as well. I wrote an article related to a research paper that was published back in 2010 that implicated the particulate matter and air pollution to a acute rise in blood pressure. And I said, where you do your cardio is probably more important than whether you do cardio. Because in the article I said, if you're one of these people who likes to run on a very, very busy roadway and you're breathing in all of that pollution at a point in time where your body is undergoing a phenomenon called vascular density, which means that all the peripheral blood vessels are dilated and pumping, and you're delivering this poison that you're breathing in to every of all the far reaches of your body. This is the worst thing you can do. And I asked Dr. Wallenius what he thought of that. Like, people who do cardio on really busy roadways, is the value of exercise, does that mitigate the danger of breathing in so much more at a hyper rate of this stuff, or should you not do cardio on busy roadways?
Well, it's very interesting you say that. I led a symposium last year at a conference on air pollution and neurological effects, and one of the reports was out of Belgium, and they were doing both human and animal work looking at sort of brain benefits of physical activity, and basically the story that they had was very interesting, and it essentially said that exactly what you're saying. So if you had people or animals, and they could look at different aspects of brain health, that were exercising, there were beneficial effects of the exercise, but if they were doing that on the roadways in higher pollution areas versus clean rooms where they were monitoring sort of levels of these things, essentially they canceled each other out. So if you were doing the beneficial physical activity in a high pollution zone, you were not getting the benefits of the physical activity.
So I think you're absolutely
right. There is something to that, yes.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Because just applying critical thinking, you know what I mean? It's like you're breathing this
absolutely.
Stuff in right, as it's coming out of the tailpipes, and you're doing it at a time where your heart rate is elevated, you're pumping more blood, you're pumping it to more areas, you're breathing deeper. It's like if you wanted to get the most pollution you could, this is what you would do.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely. There's something to that.
So what would you hope, obviously, we have to be cautious in this day and age because, the stress caused by worrying could be more damaging to a developing fetus, than maybe some of these things that we talk about. What would you hope that both clinicians and lay people take away from your research on, pollution and, pregnancy?
Well, let me just first say that you raise a very interesting point, because I actually have another line of work we could do another show on about exactly that, about stress and different aspects of that on the mother and also risk of autism in the child. So I do think that is a big issue.
Right.
I mean, at this stage, I really think that what I'm hoping, certainly clinicians and parents, I think parents are more onto this necessarily than the medical community as a whole, but certainly that you know, we do need to be paying more attention to the environmental side of things. Genetics is clearly a huge driver, and we've done a lot of work, and we should continue to do a lot of work on that because it's obviously going to be important. But we really need to start considering the environment more heavily, and I think that is to some degree happening, but more and more people have to sort of get on board with that so we can get a full picture of this. You know, as I say, it's sort of early days for this environmental research. I think the types of research are getting stronger and better, so I think this will progress more rapidly. But the more people are aware that, you know, there seems to be something there and we need to figure out what that is, for understanding sort of the development of autism and then potentially mechanistic stuff if we can figure out what's happening, but also just from a public health perspective, that these are things that we have, you know, possibilities of changing or avoiding either on a public level or a private level. And so they're important things to understand.
I think that it would not be zealot-like for a mom to consider, a mom who lives in an area where, you know, you own a home already, there's a main thoroughfare, a highway, you know, just behind your home, to keep the windows closed, run the air conditioner as often as possible, and more importantly, when you go out, to try to find some sort of, I don't know about a breathing apparatus, I'm not saying like a gas mask, but something that, I'm sure there's something on the internet that's designed to remove particulate matter, just the way we have filters that remove this stuff from our water. And I think that, you know, if you take this seriously, and I think it deserves to be taken seriously, I don't think this is like, oh, come on, you're overreacting now, Carl. You know, forget about autism for a second. Let's say the linkage to autism is minuscule. We don't know what the other damning effects of breathing pollution in and delivering it through the umbilical cord to this forming fetus is. And we won't know for probably decades from now as more thorough research is being done and we accumulate more information from the real population. This is one of those critical thinking skills of mine. I say, you know what? If you can't move, then you need to be more aware of the quality of the air that you're breathing. Right. That almost rhymes. How do you like that one?
That's good. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's generally right. I guess my caution would be two different cautions. One is certainly understanding the types of things you're going to get into to avoid the pollutants. You know, how well do they really work? What's being done? And the second somewhat cautionary tale is that, you know, a lot of, for example, even our work, it's modeling outdoor air pollutants, right? But a lot of what you're exposed to is actually indoor pollutants, and those can in fact differ greatly. And so, especially these early days when we haven't sort of nailed down the exact ingredient here, so to speak, you know, there are things that are much higher in indoor air than outdoor air, and things off gas from furniture, from TV sets, you know, that the plastics in them. And we don't know a whole lot about what those do either. So one, you know, runs the potential risk of shutting the window to keep the outdoor stuff out and then keeping all the indoor stuff in. And if that's the bad stuff, then you're in trouble. I don't mean to sort of scare people.
No.
There's this kind of trading one thing you know, you do know for something you don't know.
Well, we've talked about, I think it was called Silver Light, which is a flame retardant that California outlawed several years ago. Well, that was one of the things that was found. Flame retardants were found in umbilical cord blood.
Right, yeah, those, scientific name is polybrominated diphenyl ethers. And yes, they will off-gas from sort of plastics, particularly in the U.S. because they're fire resistant. So a lot of our codes require essentially a certain level of fire resistance. And so they were used pretty heavily. And there's a lot of work going on now as to what health effects those potentially have.
Yes, and those don't come from the tailpipes of cars.
That's right.
That's coming from that little pillow that you rest your head on at night.
Exactly. So.
All right, listen, I want to thank you, Dr. Weisskopf, for coming on and talking about this a very, very important topic.
Thank you for having me.
All right, pleasure. Take care. All right, so stay tuned. We got one other thing I want to talk about when we come back. We'll be right back.
Train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetic Cream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetic Cream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com. Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's S-U-P-E-R.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. Tomorrow's show is going to be a great show. Obviously, during the first hour, we're going to have the Blueprint Power Hour with Rob Regish, which is a big favorite of everybody's. Second hour, we're going to be joined by Marisol Lara. She is an IFBB pro bikini competitor who has risen into the limelight like a shooting star. And it's all because of her dedication. I've seen before and after pictures of her, and what she has done is just amazing. So we're going to have her on tomorrow for the ladies out there to talk about what it takes to have that level of dedication, how you have to change your life. Do your friends go with you or don't they? Do your family support you or don't they? It's going to be a really interesting discussion because so many of us have desires to reach certain goals. I don't care what they are. Maybe they're not being a bikini competitor. Maybe it's making it to a regional or a local CrossFit game. Maybe it's to compete in powerlifting. But all of these things require the same amount of effort, regardless of what they are, the same amount of dedication, regardless of what they are. Some people aren't willing to put the dedication in. They can, but they just don't. They get derailed over and over again for whatever reasons. So we're going to talk to Marisol tomorrow, and we're going to find out how heroic of an effort was it for her to do the things that she did that literally catapulted her right into the IFBB pro card that she now has. And I promise you it'll be an interesting discussion for both men and women. Also want to remind you that Livon Labs has their glutathione supplement. For those of you who are taking the vitamin C and the vitamin B complex, which is the Altrient, now Livon Labs cocktail, the glutathione supplement is a fantastic addition to this. It's a great way to get glutathione into the body. It's a better way than infusion, and it's a very, very reasonably priced supplement, especially when you buy them all three together. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Livon Labs glutathione banner ad today to learn more. Okay, don't forget, tune in tomorrow. It's going to be a great show. We'll see you then.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.